morning. It's Wednesday, January 25th, 2006, and this is the KBOO Morning News. I'm Brian Smith. Coming up on this program, the city of Portland paid an expert to testify before a grand jury that cleared the police in the shooting of an unarmed black motorist. Preservationists in New Orleans say that the city will tear down structurally sound houses in its plan to demolish homes damaged by Katrina. And a report has found that large amounts of cash for Iraq's reconstruction was handed over without receipts and even gambled away. Portland area weather calls for rain with temperatures around 50 degrees.
Conservation and sport fishing groups have filed a lawsuit challenging a legislative move by Idaho Senator Larry Craig, directing the Bonneville Power Administration to eliminate funding for an agency that counts young salmon crossing dams. The lawsuit was filed in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. It names BPA as the defendant and asks the court to direct the agency to keep the Fish Passage Center intact. It is now on track to be taken over by another organization. Federal Judge James Redden of Portland took control of dam operations last year after finding that the Bush administration plan for operating them without causing the extinction of salmon was illegal. Data from the Fish Passage Center figured in Redden's order to spill more water over the dams to help young salmon reach the ocean rather than running the water through turbines to generate electricity.
Five workers filed a federal action racketeering lawsuit yesterday, accusing the United Auto Workers of trading wage and benefit concessions for Freightliner's assistance in organizing workers. The five North Carolina workers filed the complaint in the U.S. District Court in Charlotte, North Carolina, against the UAW and Freightliner, a truck manufacturer with headquarters in Portland. They charged that union officials and company managers agreed to wage and benefit cuts at non-union plants in North Carolina in 2002. In the exchange for valuable company assistance in organizing those workers. The lawsuit was filed under the Federal Racketeering Influenced and Corruption Practice Act, which bars employers from delivering things of values to union. It contains four alleged RICO violations at Freightliner's plants in Mount Holly, Gastonia, and Cleveland.
The city of Portland has taken the unusual step of paying a national expert on deadly force to testify before a grand jury that ultimately cleared a police officer after killing an unarmed black motorist. Outside experts often testify at trials, but grand jury proceedings are secret hearings where the prosecution presents the case alone. No attorney would be able to question the credibility of the prosecution's expert before the grand jury decides whether criminal charges are appropriate. City attorneys said the expert was hired to educate jurors in the case. They couldn't recall another time when an outside expert was hired to provide testimony in a grand jury review of a police shooting. Eldon Rosenthal, the attorney representing the family of James Jahar Perez, contends the expert was summoned to influence jurors, not to indict. Rosenthal added that the city paid more than $6,000 to hire the expert to testify before the grand jury and the inquest. And in the court papers, he says the city officials spent substantial taxpayer dollars to ensure the grand jury cleared Sari. Perez was killed in the driver's seat of his car on March 28, 2004, after being stopped by Officer Jason Sari and his partner, Sean McComber.
The top Democrat on the Senate panel investigating the government's botched response to Hurricane Katrina accused administration officials of failing to cooperate in trying to run out the clock on the congressional probe. This from Reuters. Senator Joseph Lieberman said in a hearing held by the Senate Homeland Security Committee that the problems begin at the White House, where there has been a near total lack of cooperation that has made it impossible to do the thorough investigation. Lieberman said the administration has delivered few of the documents requested by the committee and hindered its ability to obtain information from the agencies involved in preparing and responding to the hurricane.
Preservationists say the city would tear down structurally sound historic buildings under a much criticized plan to cull the city of homes in danger of falling over in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. The city wants to tear down about 2,000 homes that inspectors deemed needed to be demolished soon. But preservationists say that at least 71 of those homes, all of them in historic districts, should not be demolished. The protest by preservationists are just the latest attack on the city's demolition plans, which have triggered strong emotions among many blacks who fear that the city wants to bulldoze their neighborhoods. A lawsuit forced the city to halt demolition plans and agree to notify homeowners if their homes are to be razed, something the city had at first said it did not need to do if a home was a public risk. The inspections were done by the National Trust for Historic Preservation, the New Orleans-based Preservation Resource Center, and volunteers. A city official who oversees permits and safety said opponents to demolitions would have about 3 months to prove buildings should be removed from the demolition list. He said buildings that are found to be structurally sound could be saved.
Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez defended George W. Bush's domestic eavesdropping program as lawful in the latest attempt by the administration to counter criticism over their domestic surveillance program. This from Reuters. During a speech at the Georgetown University Law Center, a group of students donned black hoods and held a sign in protest, while others stood silently with their backs turned to Gonzalez as he spoke. Gonzalez denied that Bush was violating laws by authorizing the NSA to monitor international phone calls and emails by Americans suspected of links to terrorism without the approval of a court. Critics say the program violates the U.S. Constitution and a 1978 law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which makes it illegal to spy on U.S. citizens in the United States without the approval of the special court. Gonzalez is due to testify on the matter at a Senate hearing on February 6th. Gonzalez said Bush has inherent constitutional powers to conduct warrantless surveillance to detect or prevent an attack. He added that a resolution passed by the U.S. Congress after September 11th authorizing the use of military force gave Bush the right to approve the eavesdropping. Senate Democrat leader Harry Reid disagreed and accused the administration of playing politics with national security.
The Judiciary Committee voted along party lines to confirm Judge Samuel Alito to the Supreme Court. Democrats voiced strong opposition, asserting Alito would reverse personal liberties, increase presidential powers, and side with the most conservative judges. Republicans showed strong support for Alito, claiming that Democrats are playing politics on the back of the judiciary. Leanne Caldwell has more from Capitol Hill.
All eight Democrats of the Senate Judiciary Committee voted against Alito for Supreme Court Justice, but having a minority of seats, the 10 Republicans were able to move his nomination to the Senate floor for a full vote. Throughout their statements, Democrats voiced opposition against Samuel Alito, saying he will turn back decades of progress in the area of civil liberties and freedoms. But one consistent concern was Samuel Alito's answers regarding presidential powers. Ranking Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy from Vermont.
We have a president who is prone to unilateralism and assertions of executive power that extend all the way to illegal spying on Americans. Preventing government intrusion into the privacy and freedoms of Americans is one of the hallmarks of the Supreme Court. There's no assurance that Judge Alito will serve as an effective check and balance on government intrusion into the lives of Americans. Indeed, his record suggests otherwise.
That concern was echoed by Democratic Senator Russell Feingold of Wisconsin.
He returned again and again to a formulaic response that told us nothing at all. He said that the president must follow the Constitution and must follow the laws that are consistent with the Constitution. Mr. Chairman, any first-year law student could tell you that. That kind of stock phrase, which Judge Alito repeated over and over again, tells us absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing about his view of whether the president can, consistent with the Constitution, violate a criminal law.
The Bush administration is defending its domestic intelligence program conducted by the National Security Agency, which wiretaps phones of Americans suspected of having ties to terrorists. The Justice Department released a defense last week saying the plan is legal under Supreme Court case Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, which said Congress gave the president expanded powers in 2001. The issue could very likely be heard in the Supreme Court. Republicans defended Alito, saying accusations by Democrats are political games to win midterm elections held at the end of this year. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina.
I am very concerned that the war resolution is being interpreted overly broad. I think that is a legitimate concern for the Congress to have, and I look forward to working with you. What's going on in the Judge Alito nomination, I think, is not advising and consenting. It's more about politics. We're no longer advising and consenting. We're jockeying for the next election. And over time, we'll erode the quality of the judiciary.
While much of the opinions focused on presidential powers, supporters and opponents of Alito filled the hearing room and the hallway outside. Both sides were concerned about liberty and rights, but both sides felt pleased with the outcome of today's vote. Peggy Birchfield supports Alito. She is with the Religious Freedom Coalition.
A lot of the senators explained the way they felt this hearing or this particular confirmation should go. We don't want it to be a political matter. We want to have a judge that, you know, that judges correctly on the bench, that judges for the people.
Nancy Keenan is president of NARAL Pro-Choice America and opposes him.
You know, I'm proud of the Democrats today as they really did stand up for the American public, and they made it clear that liberty and privacy and freedom are important, and Sam Alito will not protect those values for us if he is confirmed.
The Senate will begin debate tomorrow on Alito's confirmation. Some groups will push for a Democratic-led filibuster to block the vote. Democratic leadership has no plans of a filibuster, but they have not ruled out the possibility. A straight party-line vote would see Alito's passage with Republicans having a majority. And Democratic Senator Ben Nelson from Nebraska has announced that he will vote in favor of Alito. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Europe's human rights watchdog accused Washington yesterday of using gangster tactics in their prisoner rendition practices, and criticized European countries who appear to have done nothing to intervene. This from The Guardian. Swiss Senator Dick Marty, who is investigating allegations of extraordinary rendition, estimated that more than 100 people have been flown to prisons in third world countries where they may have been tortured. He says that individuals have been abducted, deprived of their liberty, and transported to different destinations in Europe to be handed over to countries in which they have suffered degrading treatment and torture. It is highly unlikely that European governments, or at least their intelligence services, were unaware. Marty is frustrated with the U.S. and some European governments for offering little cooperation as he seeks to unravel allegations that the CIA has been hiding and interrogating suspects at secret detention centers in Eastern Europe or flying suspects to third world countries where they are tortured. Jack Straw, the British Foreign Secretary, wrote to a British member of the Council of Europe Assembly to say that between May of 1997 and this month, the U.S. asked Britain to allow four people to be transported through the U.K. to face trial in the U.S. Britain had allowed two to pass through and blocked two others. This took place in 1998 when Bill Clinton was president.
The U.S. military may begin to carry out death sentences after nearly 45 years since its last execution. Nicholas Killian reports from Washington, D.C.
The United States Army has recently changed its death penalty regulations in what an internal document describes as a, quote, major revision. The changes now permit court martials and military tribunals to hand down death sentences, and the executions may be carried out at any U.S. military base. David Elliott of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty fears this would give the military too much jurisdiction.
But if we're going to have one, then it needs to be carried out in the public eye. It needs to be transparent. It needs to be done under the light of day so that the American people can see exactly what's going on.
The new regulations would allow executions at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo Bay, where the cases of suspected enemy combatants are heard by military tribunals. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Nicholas Killian.
George Bush has committed the U.S. to the defense of Israel against threats from Iran, saying he would not allow the world to be blackmailed by an Iranian nuclear weapon. This from The Guardian. Bush's threat came at a tense time in relations with Iran after Tehran vowed to restrict or restart nuclear research. The U.S. is leading an attempt to persuade other countries to refer Iran to the U.N. Security Council for failure to cooperate with the United Nations inspectors. Bush said, "Israel's our ally, and we're committed to the safety of Israel, and it's a commitment we will keep." in his talk at Kansas State University. He also defended his decision to allow wiretaps on telephone calls and emails between American residents and foreigners without court warrants, insisting it was legal.
A federal judge has ruled that the Pentagon must release the names and nationalities of hundreds of men detained at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. From New York City, Jeff Brady has more.
In yesterday's ruling, federal Judge Jed Rakoff of the U.S. District Court in Manhattan ordered the Department of Defense to disclose the names and nationalities of hundreds of detainees held at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The verdict is the result of a lawsuit filed by the Associated Press under the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA. The Pentagon had previously released more than 500 transcripts of the military tribunals to the news agency, but names and other identifying information were blacked out. The judge's ruling in the lawsuit was made final this week after he rejected the government's argument that the secrecy measure was to protect the privacy rights of the detainees. The Pentagon must now hand over uncensored documents to the Associated Press, and the government has until tomorrow to appeal the ruling. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeff Brady in New York.
According to Ross Story, a senior fraud investigator for the Pentagon who has fought against military contractor corruption for 7 years has been suspended for insubordination. Kenneth Pelios, an industrial engineer for the Defense Contract Management Agency, or DCMA, said his 30-day suspension was absolutely related to his whistleblowing. In 2002, Pelios filed the report Criminal Vulnerability and Fraud, which accused Lockheed Martin of willfully overcharging the Pentagon and defense officials of ignoring his warnings. Led Senate Finance Committee Chairman Charles Grassley to persuade the DOD's Inspector General's offices to launch investigations. It was reported last November that Pelios faced suspension for refusing to cooperate in an internal investigation to determine the source of a rumor that management had targeted certain employees to be fired. DCMA previously attempted to suspend Pelios in 2003 after officials claimed he had made threats against fellow employees. The agency later acknowledged that he had made no such threats and reinstated him. Pelios' suspension, effective January 25th, is for the offense of refusal to cooperate with an agency investigation, insubordination, and failure to follow instructions, according to a copy of the subpoena notice.
A report has found that large amounts of cash meant for Iraq's reconstruction were stashed in filing cabinets, handed over without receipts, and gambled away, this according to the BBC. The audit by U.S.-appointed inspectors shows the misuse of millions of dollars of funds. The report said U.S. post-war planning was limited by a desire for secrecy. The report by the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction said that there were no detailed, obvious preparations for the reconstruction of Iraq in the run-up to the 2003 invasion to avoid the impression that the U.S. government had already decided on military intervention. Nevertheless, the U.S. has allocated billions of dollars to rebuild Iraq, and large amounts have been raised through the sale of Iraqi oil. Significant sums of this have been dispersed without any accounting procedures. One official kept $2 million in a bathroom safe, while another allegedly stole $100,000 from a colleague's unsecured stash to balance his own books. Payment was handed over for projects without any official contract being drawn up or checks on the work carried out. More than 2,000 contracts were found to be at fault. One U.S. military assistant gambled up to $60,000 away while accompanying the Iraqi Olympic team to the Philippines.
The Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ, called for the U.S. military to free two journalists, one held without charge in Iraq and the other detained in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. This from Reuters. The group also demanded an explanation from the U.S. military for holding a Reuters cameraman, Samir Mohammed Noor, for 8 months without charges until his release on Sunday. He was freed from the military custody after being held in Baghdad's Abu Ghraib prison and then at Camp Buka in southern Iraq. The CPJ says the military is still detaining, without charge, at least one journalist in Iraq and another at the Guantanamo Bay. Abdul Amir Yusin Hussein, an Iraqi cameraman working for the CBS News, was taken into custody after being wounded by fire from U.S. forces as he filmed clashes in Mosul, on April 5th of last year. And a 35-year-old Sudanese national and assistant cameraman for Al Jazeera was detained by Pakistani forces after he and an Al Jazeera reporter tried to re-enter southern Afghanistan at a border crossing in Pakistan in December 2001 and is still being held in Guantanamo Bay.
Google, the internet search engine, has said it will censor its search services in China in order to gain greater access to China's fast-growing market. This from the BBC. Google has offered a Chinese language version of its search engine for years, but users have been frustrated by government blocks on the site. So they're setting up a new site, google.cn, which it will censor itself to satisfy Beijing. Critics warn the new version could restrict access to thousands of sensitive terms and websites. Such topics are likely to include independence for Taiwan and the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre. The Chinese government limits what users can access on the internet. The BBC news site is inaccessible. Google's move in China comes less than a week after it resisted efforts by the U.S. Department of Justice to make it disclose data on what people were searching for. Google argues it can play a more useful role in China by participating than by boycotting it, despite the compromises involved. But a survey last August revealed Google was losing market share to Beijing-based rival Baidu.com. Last year, Yahoo was accused of supplying data to China that was used as evidence to jail a Chinese journalist for 10 years.
Employees said that China has shut down a newspaper supplement known for its in-depth reporting on sensitive issues, the latest measure by the government to tighten controls over the media. Bing Dian, a four-page weekly supplement of the state-run China Youth Daily, was halted until further notice late yesterday, the eve before its latest issue was to appear. The chief editor said he was called into a meeting at 8 p.m. and notified of the shutdown without being given a reason. The 11-year-old publication had become a must-read among China's educated elite, running penetrating articles on topics issues such as chemical spill that polluted a major river last year. Its closure reflects growing tensions between the Chinese leadership and media outlets that have been pushing the limits of official tolerance, in part to capture greater market share. In an attempt to reassert its authority, the government has recently fired aggressive editors and intimidated and even jailed enterprising reporters. According to government figures, authorities banned 79 newspapers deemed illegal in a nationwide crackdown last year.
The Italian oil company, Egypt, says it is pulling its workers out of Nigeria after offices were attacked in the southern city of Port Harcourt, this from the BBC. At least 9 people were killed in the assault on the riverside offices. The rebels contacted on speedboats in the latest in a string of attacks on oil companies in the Niger Delta, home to the most of Nigeria's oil wealth. 4 foreign oil workers were kidnapped in the area by an armed group demanding the release of 2 ethnic leaders and more local control of oil resources. It's not clear which group carried out yesterday's attack on the Egypt offices. Oil workers' unions in Nigeria have threatened to withdraw members from the main oil-producing region unless the government moves to improve security. The instability has led to a 10% fall in Nigeria's oil production. The country is Africa's leading oil exporter, and the 5th biggest source of U.S. oil imports. But despite its wealth, many Nigerians live in abject poverty.
About 300 protesters, including top gang leaders, marched through a bullet-scarred slum on the edge of Haiti's capital, accusing UN troops of shooting civilians and demanding polling sites for the February 7th elections. Chanting "We want peace" and displaying their new voter ID cards, the protesters shuffled through Cite Soleil and had passed a UN military base. Tensions have surged in the vast slum amid battles between armed street gangs and UN peacekeepers sent to restore order after former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide was removed from power in February of 2004. UN officials say gangs use Cite Soleil as a base to carry out kidnappings in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Electoral officials have said they plan to move voting stations out of the slum as a security precaution. People in the slum, a stronghold of Aristide allies, accuse peacekeepers of firing randomly during nighttime assaults. A UN spokesman denied they fired into the slums unprovoked. That's the KABU Morning News for Wednesday, January 25th, 2006. Weather for today calls for rain with temperatures around 50 degrees. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM, on Translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on Translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kabu.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Greg is on the board right now, and the KABU Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Ian Duncan.
And coming up later this morning on KABU.
At 7:30, Dave Mazza hosts Locus Focus Talk Radio. His guest is Nicole Ozer, Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director for the ACLU Northern California chapter. The topic is radio frequency IDs and the Federal Uniform State Identification Act. At 9, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don reviewing the latest movies. At 9:30, hear an interview with John Stabler of the Center for Media and Democracy and author of Mad Cow USA. He'll discuss recent events related to mad cow disease. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller speaks with Jennifer Van Bergen about the unitary executive theory of governance. Then at 10:30, Andrew talks with Elizabeth Holtzman about impeachment. She served on the House Judiciary Committee when President Richard Nixon was impeached. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodwin.
That's all right here on KABU, your community, non-corporate, volunteer-powered, and listener-sponsored radio station. Be sure to catch the KABU Evening News at 5 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
This is the community calendar for Wednesday, January 25th. Portland Peak Oil presents Eco-Village Development Expert Brandy Gallagher McPherson. This event takes place tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. at the St. Francis Church Dining Hall at 1182 Southeast Pine Street in Portland. Brandy is the Executive Director of Our Eco Village of Vancouver Island, BC, Canada, and she'll be bringing an innovative and unique discussion on the real-life example of how one eco village was created from within all regulatory processes. To contact Portland Peak Oil regarding their event this evening, email them at portlandpeakoil.org or visit their website at portlandpeakoil.org. Spread the news of nature. Become a volunteer with Portland Parks Environmental Education and share your knowledge, enthusiasm, and feelings of responsibility about nature. If you have time during weekdays to work with youngsters and wish to get exercise walking the trails in the city, consider becoming an interpretive guide. The training begins February 1st. For more information, please contact Sue Thomas at 503-823-3601 or email envired@ci.portland.or.us. Join the Bicycle Transportation Alliance for Better Biking and a free ride. When you become a member of the BTA before February 1st, you'll receive with your membership a complimentary entry to the Worst Day of the Year ride. This is an 18 to 40 mile ride around Portland on February 12th and is a chance to laugh at the elements and join hundreds of other riders for a celebratory ride with yummy rest stops and warm soup and bread at the finish line. Proceeds of the event benefit the Community Cycling Center. The Bicycle Transportation Alliance is a statewide group for bicyclists' rights. For more information, please call 503-226-0676, extension 15. You've been listening to the Community Calendar for Wednesday, January 25th. This is Alicia Olson for KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.